Need to say that the information here is for the Oral History Committee for the Society for American Baseball Research. It will be submitted to Cooperstown, but will also be made available to Sabre members for purposes of research and the like.
And this is going to be edited by you, I presume.
Well, yeah, we'll, it's off the record, we won't put it in there. So, good afternoon. We can eat while we talk.
Okay, good.
I think first question I ask everybody is, was there a moment in your career, in your life, and can you remember when it was when you realized that you probably could become, you could probably become a professional baseball player and have a career in baseball?
Well, I've always, ever since I was a young kid, young boy, for whatever reason, I wanted to play professional baseball, and baseball was my favorite game.
So
we're good.
Very good. Thank you. Good.
Thank
salt
you.
And pepper?
Salt and pepper. We can do some.
Pepper. That's on tape.
Yeah. No, that was on pause. So
when I was a young boy, I always wanted to play professional or baseball. That was my game, and I was just very fortunate that I was able to do that. Living in, born and raised in Hanford, California, at that time, Major League Baseball was all in the East or Midwest, and I'd never seen a Major League game. They didn't have TV, so I was never able to watch the game itself, but I was able to read about it.
What about radio? There was no radio either, right?
Not that much. Mm-hmm. Not that much. But I've always wanted to, I played football when I was at Santa Clara, or actually I played football and my last year in high school started.
What position?
Played, actually in high school I played fullback in the single wing, not until my senior year. My folks didn't want me to play because they were afraid I was going to get hurt. Being a fairly good size, I was about 205 when I graduated from high school.
Wow.
So I didn't really have a problem as far as getting hurt. But anyhow, I played in high school.
Thank you.
And then went on to USF and then went into the service. And then when I got out of the service, I went to Menlo Junior College and I played there. And then went to Santa Clara and played there for 2 years.
Weren't you like a junior college All-American or something?
Oh, I made the All-League in the junior college. I made All-American baseball at Santa Clara University. Played an East-West game in 1949.
Oh, wow.
Football, of course.
Tell me about that. Who did you play against?
There was Ed Pinelli. It's the one that I really remember. He was All-American for Notre Dame, played for the East. And we were underdogs. We weren't supposed to do much of anything. And we ended up losing 14-12. And it had been a rainy day before and rained that morning. And then it dried up a little bit and quit raining. But the field was awfully wet. We played at Stanford.
Right.
And we had a guy by the name of Stotzenberger who played at Texas A&M, who was a guard, and he kicked point after, and he missed both of them. Otherwise, it would have been a tie ball game, and we were really underdogs. And it was a fun game.
Did anybody from that game ever go on? I mean, what were the big names in that game?
I don't know that there was anyone that went on. I know Hendren from USC, Don Dahl, Kirby, UCLA.
Santa Clara, that back then, they were on the same level as the other Division I. They were
yes, we. My senior year, we played five of the top 10 teams in the nation. We beat Oklahoma, and Oklahoma went on to win, I think, about 50-some-odd games in a row after that. We played SMU with Doak Walker and Kyle Rote. They had a great ball club. We played them in Dallas, and they beat us 33-0. I mean, they really whomped us, you know. But, and then we played Nevada, who was 10th in the nation. We beat Nevada.
Wow.
And Michigan State tied us at Kezar Stadium. Had we won that game, we'd probably go into a bowl game. But we ended up 7-2-1 that year, and we had a pretty good ball club. For, you know, Santa Clara not being that large, so it was great.
Now, who was your coach at on the baseball team at Santa Clara?
Patty Cottrell, who was a great coach. In fact, he was a bird dog for the Yankee organization. He worked for Joe Devine, who was the head scout on the West. And he was instrumental, I think, in signing me. There were other people who were talking to me, but Patty had the inside track, naturally. You know.
How did Santa Clara, how did the baseball team do that when you played for them?
It was a CIBA. USC won the championship, and I think we came in second. You know, we had a pretty good ball club, but USC was strong.
What were the other teams in your league? It was like Pac-10?
Well, it was Stanford, Cal, UCLA, USC, St. Mary's, and Santa Clara.
Did any of the guys you played with there ever go on?
Tom Kelly went on, played with me at Twin Falls our first year out after we graduated from Santa Clara. And then he broke his ankle later on, and he quit. But that was the only one on the team that went on. Jim Mangan, a catcher.
I interviewed him.
Yeah, he went on and played with Pittsburgh and the Giants. Good ball player. Good ball player.
So, you got drafted out of... How did you get drafted?
Drafted by...
In baseball.
In baseball. I was signed by Joe Devine, and I went to Twin Falls in the Pioneer League. They gave me a bonus. At that time, if you signed for more than $6,000, you were a bonus baby and you had to stay on the Major League roster. So they gave me $5,250, and then the rest of it was my pay for the rest of that year. They guaranteed me $800 a month the next year. And that was what I signed for I belonged to the Yankees.
And that was considered pretty good signing money?
Well, it wasn't bad at that time, you know. There were a lot of people that got a lot more than that, but I was pleased with what I got. You know.
Were there a lot of any other teams in contention?
Well, I talked to Detroit Tigers, the Cardinals, and the other two that seemed to be pretty interested. But I've been in the service, and I was 21 years old, so they were concerned about my age, too, and then the fact that I'd played football, and they didn't know how that would relate to baseball, you know. I was running in for a ball, and he tumbled. He fell on his shoulder.
Wow.
Broke his collarbone. Has this been on all the time?
No, I turned it off while we were reading. Okay, so we got to the point where you got signed by the Yankees. Must have been a big thrill.
It was.
And they give you all that money right up front? The signing bonus, really,
I received
a check for $5,200.
Received a check for $5,250, and the balance was paid in the salary that first year.
And you were how old?
I was 21.
And did you spend the money right away?
No.
Or were you frugal?
I put it away and saved it.
Wow, good.
And needed it later on because my second year, according to my agreement when I signed, I was paid $800 a month. And I had a very poor year that year, so they cut me back to $400 a month.
Now, this was your first year in the minors with Twin Falls.
My first year in the minors with Twin Falls, I got the balance of my bonus money up to the $6,000. This next year, I had $800 a month. I started with Kansas City Blues. I pulled my thigh, and they sent me down to Norfolk in the Piedmont League because Joe Sarries was a trainer down there, and he was very good at working muscles, good hands. He later became a trainer of the Yankees.
Now, Kansas City Blues, was that a AAA?
That was AAA, American Association.
Tell me about it. What was it? Where'd you play? What was the stadium?
It was at the old Blues Stadium. And I opened in right field, and I don't know, it was the first week or so, a couple of weeks that I pulled my leg, and I was out for a month, and I couldn't run at all, you know. So finally they sent me down to Quincy in the Piedmont League. And then I had a very poor year that year. So consequently, instead of paying me the $800, they paid me the $800 that year, but they cut me to $400 a month the next year.
Cut you in half.
And I wasn't too happy about that. And they said, well, that's all they could do. And at that time, you couldn't do anything about it. And I had, in my own mind, I figured that I would play 4 years, pardon me, and if I wasn't in a position where I thought I could continue on in the major leagues, then I'd quit. So that's why I continued playing.
7 years later.
I continued playing until, well, I was purchased by the Yankees in 53, which is my fourth year, after my fourth year.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that I did what I was able to do. I wanted to, what I would want to do, not able to do, but also wanted to do, playing the major league. So that's why I continued on. Naturally, I would, you know, signed by the Yankees. So I went to spring training. They had one position open in the outfield, and I was fortunate enough to grab onto it and stayed with the Yankees at 53.
And you had a great season.
Well, Stengel platooned me. I was, of course, a right-handed hitter, and Gene Woodling and I were in left field.
So it was Mantle, Bauer.
Mantle in center field and Bauer and Noren in right field. And Bauer and Noren would be alternated because Bauer being right-handed and Noren being left-handed hitters. And then Woodling and I would alternate in left field. And I was used not that much because there weren't that many left-handed pitchers in the American League, you know.
But you still played in 61 games, 121 at-bats.
Right.
You batted .314. I mean, that is...
I was very happy.
Did you qualify for Rookie of the Year? You must have got some votes.
I don't remember, but I, huh. You know...
Do you know who was Rookie of the Year in the American League that year?
No, I don't. No, I don't remember
that. That'd be interesting to find out if you got votes.
Yeah, I would. Why don't you find out
for
me?
I'll find out. I can find out. I can find out every year.
Probably I wasn't playing regular. Had I been playing regular, of course, mm-hmm. and done something like that way, there would have been a good chance. But just, you know, as a part-time player, so to speak.
Well, this is why they say that, you know, they give Stengel such credit for being, you know, they said he was the one of the first managers to really platoon. And so you were.
I was part of that.
You were part
era,
of that.
Right. Yeah.
Tell me about your first game. What do you remember of your first game? Was it a home or away?
I really don't remember my first game. I can remember walking into the stadium. It was very impressive, yeah. But I don't remember what happened my first game. I can remember what happened the first time I saw a Major League Baseball game was in spring training in St. Petersburg. Stengel put me up to pinch hit. We were playing the Cardinals at Al Lang Field. And that was the first Major League game I'd ever seen in my life. And I went up to pinch hit against this left-hander by the name of Johnson. I got off the handle hit over the second baseman's head, a dying duck. For a base hit, and I was on first, and then Snuffy Sternweiss, who was hitting next, walked, so I'm on second, he's on first. I look down to Corsetti, the coach at third base, and he gives me the steal sign. And I looked again to make sure that he gave me the sign again. So on the pitch, I went down to third, and of course, Sternweiss was right behind me at second. And Joe Garagiola was catching for the Cardinals, and he threw to Glaviano, who was a third baseman. and he threw it to the inside of the diamond a little over his head, so I slid into third, and the ball goes into left field, and I pop up and run to scored, and I was elated because that was the first major league game I ever seen.
Well, that's a pretty amazing thing to think of. It was the first major league game you ever saw and you played in.
Right.
And scored and got a hit.
I scored a run, got a hit, scored a run, and it was really great. And, of course, I was just a rookie trying to make the ball club. And whether that helped or not, I don't know, but it didn't hurt me.
And do you remember your first at-bat in a real game?
No, I don't. I really don't.
Do you remember your first home run?
Well, that was, I think...
You hit two that year.
I hit two. The one that really stands out of the two, and it could have been, I don't know if it was my first one, but our son was born August of 26. My wife was in New York at Lenox Hill Hospital. And I started that game in Detroit that day. Ted Gray was pitching. And my first time up, I hit a home run. And I'm circling the bases with a big smile on my face, happy and elated because our son was born that day and my wife was all right, the son was all right. And I get in the dugout and they give me the silent treatment. Nobody said anything. You know. Then all of a sudden they start hollering and jumping up and all that. But that was the one that I really remember. And the other one I can't remember where it was.
You hit 28 home runs in 6 seasons. Do you ever hit anybody? Hit any off anybody we'd know? Any Hall of Famers?
28. What year was that?
Well, I said you hit 28 home runs total, according to this.
In what year?
I mean, in your whole career.
Oh, with the Yankees. I mean, with the Major League Ball Club.
Yeah.
I mean. Oh, okay. I can remember one off of Chuck Stobbs and when I was playing with the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And there was a 3-0 count. I looked down at the coach at third, and he gave me the hit sign. And it was a 1-1 ball game at that time.
It was the Senators?
Washington Senators, yeah, in Griffith Stadium. And he threw the pitch, and I hit the ball out of the park for a home run, which put us one run up, yeah, at that time.
Wow.
So we ended up, with the Red Sox, we ended up in fourth place. And we each got $900 at that time, $900 for coming in.
Well, you know what Chuck Stobbs' is big claim to fame is, right? He's the one who gave up mantles.
Mantles, right? And I was there that day.
Oh, you were?
Oh, yeah. I was, 53.
Tell me about that.
It was amazing because I just happened to be concentrating on Mick when he was at the plate. And I don't know, I found out later the pitch was a changeup, but I was just watching him. And he didn't move bodily.
Jimmy, see my friend, anything?
We're great. I'm fine.
You're fine. I'm not through yet.
Take a good attention.
I'm fine. When he unloaded, I mean, it was everything. I mean, he came around beautifully and everything. And like I say, I was just watching him for whatever reason that particular time. And he really had a tremendous swing. And then he hit the ball and we all looked up and we all stood up and watched the flight of the ball. And it was unbelievable. It went out of the ballpark. And they put a baseball up at that spot where the ball went out. And Charlie Dressen, who I think was managing the call, Washington Senators at that time, sat, and their dugout was on the first baseline, which allowed him to see left field all the time. And he was always looking at that ball. I think about 2 weeks later, he told him to take it down. He got tired of looking at it. It was a great, great moment, I'll tell you. I've never seen a man hit the ball like he could hit the ball.
Well, that's the amazing thing, because you figure if it was a changeup, he had to provide all that power.
That's right, right.
I mean, didn't you have more luck? I mean, didn't when you hit a fastball, didn't you feel there was chances of it to go further than hitting a changeup?
Yeah, that's true, but a lot of times the ball, it's the velocity of the bat against the ball. It would make more sense that if a man threw a fastball and you hit it, it would go further. I've not ever calculated that out, but I know that I've seen a lot of long balls off of a changeup. Yeah.
Let me pause again. Okay, so 53, let's focus on that. I mean, after that year, you had to believe that you might have a future being an regular outfielder for the Yankees. I mean, did that cross your mind? I mean, you played well. It was your first year.
I thought that that would be set for a while with the Yankees. Before the end of the season, we were going down in the stretch, and Casey, we were sitting on the bench, and I wasn't playing. We were playing the Philadelphia Athletics in New York, and Casey sat down next to me, and he said, Bill, he says, we're going down the wire now, and I'm not going to be able to play you. I'm going to have to go with Woodling, because he's a pro. You know, he's been here a long time, got a lot of experience, and we want to win the pennant in the series, so I won't be able to play. He says, if you want to play, I can send you down to Kansas City, and we'll be able to play every day. He says, but that's up to you. Think about it. Let me know after the game. So I said, okay. So I thought, I'm not going to send myself down. If he wants to send me down, that's fine. I can't do anything about it, but I'm sure I'm not going to send myself down after I fought to get up here, you know, and I have a job here. So I went back, and after the game was over, I was showered, and I was standing there shaving, and Ed Lopat was standing next to me, and he said, Bill, he says, I wasn't eavesdropping or anything. He said, I couldn't help but hear the conversation that you and Casey had. He says, don't go down to Kansas City. He says, stay here. If something were to happen to Woodling, you would be in, you know. And I said, no, thanks, because I've already figured that one out. You know, I'm not going to send myself down. So I went in after I got dressed. I went into Casey's office, and he just left. And I asked the clubby, where did Casey go? And he says, he just went up to the office. And Casey had his own office, but he had a door that he could go up the stairs and go up to the main office. So I opened the door, and he was going up the stairs. Of course, he had the bad leg, so it took him a little while to get up. So I hollered, hey, Case, and he stopped, and I went up the stairs, and I was standing down about a step below him. And I said, well, about going back to Kansas City, I said, I'm not going to send myself down. If you want to send me down, fine. I said, but I'm going to stay here. And he says, oh, that's okay, kid. He says, don't worry. He says, we're going to make a trade this year. He says, you're going to be all right. And he flicked me under the jaw, under the chin. And I said, thank you. So I thought,
they're going to trade Woodling.
Well, I thought I was in. I don't know what the trade was about, but it sounded like he was assuring me that I would still be with the ball club. And I was very surprised when I found out. I played winter ball that year, that winter, in Puerto Rico. And we were playing Ponce, which is on the other side of the island. And then we finished with Ponce, and then we played an exhibition game with an Army team. And so we were playing that game, and this guy came running out and said, Bill, you want it on the telephone? And the field was quite a ways away from the clubhouse. So I ran all the way back in and got on the phone. It was Associated Press writer telling me that I was part of a trade from the Yankees to the A's. And he said, do you have anything to say? And I said, no. I said, I'll wait until I get confirmation on it. So that was...
Well, that's what old that's an old famous Casey-ism, Stengel-ism, when he says, well, he goes, I don't know how to tell you this, but one of us just got traded to Kansas City.
Yeah.
So that's... I wanted to ask you about that team, because we had so many people that have been so written about and talked about, and I guess first we start off with Casey. What do you remember? Do you have any Casey stories?
Well, one time we were in Chicago playing against the White Sox, and Billy Pierce was pitching. And Billy was always tough for me because he threw that hard, high fastball that always sailed. Mm-hmm. And I was at bat, and there was a man on first. No, there was a man on second. And I had swung at a couple of pitches, and all I was trying to do was make contact with the ball. You know, I wasn't trying to hit the ball real hard. I just wanted to make contact. And after the second pitch, Stengel hollers, "Hi," and he comes running out, called me over, and he says, because he was hollering at me from the bench before that. And he says, "What I was trying to tell you is first base is open, you know." I said, "Well, I know, Casey, but all I'm trying to do is hit the ball, you know." And he goes, "Oh, okay." And he goes back to the dugout, and I think I struck out because Pierce struck me out. I faced him 15 times, and he struck me out 12 times, I think.
Wow.
And I got three base hits off of him. And the base hits were off of breaking pitches. You know.
So he had your number probably more than any other pitcher in your career.
Yeah, that pitcher was the toughest for me to hit.
Is the riding fastball?
It was, well, he's a left-handed pitcher, see? And he had a fastball that would tail off and rise up. You know, that's when he was younger and he could really come it. And, probably, and I'd been smart, I would have laid off the pitch. But I was trying to get the base hit, you know.
So what did you think about Casey overall as a manager and as a person?
I enjoyed him. He treated me well. I have no complaints. I thought he was a pretty astute manager. He knew how to handle people. There were a couple of guys that didn't get along well with him. Gene Woodling was one. He didn't get along with Casey at all. But by and large, I didn't hear anyone complaining about him. We were winning, so they couldn't say too much, you know. And I think his record proves the fact that he was a good manager.
What was your hitting style like?
Well,
I had... Low hitter, opposite field?
I was not a dead pull hitter. I hit the ball where it was pitching in a lot of cases, more so in the latter part of my career than in the earlier part. I would tend to hit the ball to left field or left center. I had hit the ball to the right center occasionally, and not with a lot of power. That's one thing I'm amazed about nowadays, that these hitters are hitting home runs to the opposite field so often. I mean, it's just part of the game now, whereas before there were not that many opposite field home runs, you know. I'm amazed at the power that they have to the opposite field. Whether that's because of the ball or whatever.
Enhancing.
Yeah.
Isn't that one guy who got caught for that from Hanford? Isn't Ken Caminiti from Hanford? No.
No. Caminiti was...
somewhere down there.
Fresno?
I thought he was Hanford. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
He went to San Jose State.
Right.
Ken Caminiti. I don't know. They're testing all these guys now. Bonds had to go testify.
Yeah.
You didn't have anything like that back then.
No.
Didn't some of the guys take speed?
Witnessed anyone taking anything or heard of anyone taking anything at all. You know, maybe an aspirin or something like that. But we didn't use those kind of drugs.
They weren't as health conscious back then, though, right?
Well,
and eating and...
No, they were, but they weren't. In other words...
a lot of guys smoked, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. I smoked, and they wouldn't allow you to... They didn't want you to swim.
Why?
There were no...
Drown or...
Oh, well, I don't know, because I think it has a lot to do with the muscles. I guess they figured it would infringe on the muscles as far as swinging a bat or whatever, and there wasn't any weights in the clubhouse at all, you know. And this is a more recent thing that they've done, and evidently has enhanced the performance of these guys. You know?
Well, you look at some of these guys like Sosa when he first came in, and what he looks like now.
Right.
I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, it's unbelievable the way these guys have built up their bodies, and it's probably due to the fact that they are able to use all these weights and all these other activities that they can do.
Right.
That they didn't want us to do when I was.
Did you lift weights?
No, never have.
Never. Yeah.
I did the push-ups and sit-ups, but that's
lifting weights in a sense because you're lifting your body weight.
That's true. Right? Yeah. I did that when I was, when I first started in college. When I do it a lot in the summer, yeah. But as far as actually lifting weights, going to a gym or using barbells, and no. And they wouldn't, again, they would not want you to do that.
Well, let's talk about Yogi Berra. What do you remember about Yogi?
Yogi was one of a kind, naturally. I didn't have too much to do with Yogi when I was with the Yankees at 53, because being a rookie, and you know, you just hold your own place. And but I know I was playing with the A's, and we were in the Yankee Stadium, and I was at the plate. And Yogi's catching, and he goes, "Hey, Bill," you know, he gives me that stuff, and then I'm at the plate, and he's picking up dirt and throwing it on my right foot, my back foot. You know, he keeps throwing dirt on my back foot. So I stepped out and I told him, I said, "Yogi, come on now, leave me alone." I said, "I'm having a hard enough time up here without you screwing around with me," you know, and he laughed. But we've always got along well.
Did he ever recite any Yogi-isms in front of you?
No. Like I say, I didn't spend that much time with him or around him, you know.
Well, that was another thing that I've heard from Paulette and Triantos and some of the other guys at the Yankee clubhouse. Was pretty cliquish. They kind of set it up in such a way that rookies were in one place, veterans were in another.
Oh, yeah.
And it took you a while. It took players a while to move up that.
You didn't get involved, you know, Rashies, Lopats, Reynolds. Those guys, they were over in their own area. And of course, they were congenial, you know, but you didn't spend a lot of time with them. You didn't. Yeah, after the games, you didn't go out to dinner with them or whatever. You had your own group that you went out with. You know? Particularly being a rookie, you know, and just wet behind the ears, so to speak, and watching everything and not really participating in a lot of that stuff. You
know? Was Pete Sheehy the clubhouse guy?
Pistol
at
Pete,
that time?
Yes, Pistol he was Pete. A clubhouse, yeah.
They said he used to have a half a cup of coffee and a cigarette ready for Joe.
Yeah.
He came out. Yeah. So what about Billy Martin?
Well, Billy,
how long had he been there when you were there? He was 25.
Let's see, in 53, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he went up in early, was it 51 or 52?
52, probably.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, because that was Mantle's rookie year, right? 52.
Right, yeah.
What was he like? Did you foresee the
well, he and I got
laid ahead for him?
No, no, I didn't. I know he was very active, so to speak. He liked to party, and he and Mantle went out, you know, and Ford. But again, I didn't partake with a lot of that stuff because I was being a rookie, and I just didn't get along that well with them.
Was that whole thing in the Copacabana later?
It was, I think it was.
No, that was that year.
That was that year, right.
I see Gus was there on your team.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, what Gus joined us the latter part of the season.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Oh, well, I heard about it. I wasn't with him.
Now, were you married then?
Or
were
right. I was married.
So you were.
I didn't do all those good things, right. Because I was with my wife when those guys were out doing their thing, you know. But I'd heard about it and read about it, but there wasn't that much talk about it in the clubhouse.
You must have gone out with him a couple times.
No, I never did.
Never
no?
Had a drink with Mickey?
No, I never did. Mickey and I got along fine. There was no problem. It's just that it was a different group, you know.
Right. Yeah. It's like,
not that it's necessarily cliquish, but you respected
their
position and they respected yours. And you went with your guys and they went with their guys. And when you went to the ballpark, you were a team. And then after that, you did your own thing, you know.
So Mantle hung out with Whitey and Billy.
Billy, yeah. And like I say, he and I got along fine. In fact, I don't know, it was 54 or 55. I think we were in, when I was with the A's, we were in New York, and he came up to the plate, and I wasn't playing that day. And I was in the dugout, and he comes up to the plate, and he starts to get set, and I hollered out, "Look out for the squeeze." He steps out, goes down and gets some dirt and starts laughing. He looks over at the dugout. And I don't know, I forget what he did that at bat. But later on in the season, I was at the plate, and he was, I guess, at hurt himself or something. He was in the dugout. So when I come up to the plate and he hollers out, "Look out for the squeeze!" He gave me the same
shot. He remembered the whole time, right.
But he was that kind of a guy. He was just a good young kid, you know, young at heart.
How could he party like he did?
I don't know. It's amazing how these guys could do it. However, you know, when I was younger and in the minor leagues, I had a few beers on occasion myself, and it seemed to have a tendency to kind of loosen you up, particularly if you're having a bad go at the plate or whatever, you know.
Right.
And you needed something to relax, and that was a way to do it. And it didn't happen that often, but evidently, I guess he found a way to really relax because he used to party quite a bit. I wasn't with him, but is this what I heard?
Who was the guy that later, I don't think he played on these teams, he was a pitcher and they said he was an alcoholic. He had like sunglasses, thick glasses, and they said that somebody told me he pitched a game actually drunk.
I want to say it's not Ryan. Ryan Duran.
He's not on this team.
Ryan Duran? No. No, he wasn't on that. I think it was Ryan Duran.
You're right. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I'd never faced him and never played with him, but he was a hard thrower, but he was wild. Wild, like the Rex Barney.
For the Cardinals.
And there was a Dodgers, I think.
Was he?
Yeah.
What do you remember about Gil McDougal?
Gil was a real neat guy. He was, of course, from the Bay Area, San Francisco. And
Is he still alive?
Yeah, so when I went back to the card show, it was a year ago, to New York, he was there, and I saw him. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. Other than shake hands and say hi, Gil, because he was signing autographs at that time. And the group that I was with, we'd signed our 2 hours and we were leaving, and he just started his group.
They were getting shifts then?
Yes, at that particular show they did. And I went over and got in front of the line, just walked up and said hello and shook hands. And, of course, him being from the Bay Area, we were close, you know. But then I hadn't seen him since, you know.
Yeah.
And he's doing well now. He had a problem with his hearing, and he's got, I think he's had some operations and some equipment, and now is doing very well as far as hearing.
Well, he had a quality career.
Yes.
And a lot of people say that he is a... Thank you.
Can I get you anything else?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. They said that he had when he hit Herb Score... Right? Isn't he the one that hit the line drive that hit Herb Score?
Right.
They said that kind of affected his career.
Knowing Gil the way I do, I think, yes, it probably did for a while.
Took it hard.
Right. And it was a line drive, and he could hit him, yeah.
And then you had Hank Bauer, former Marine or whatever.
That's right.
Tough guy.
Hank was a great guy. Great guy. He and I got along well together. He could throw that ball. He had a good arm.
But you played in 61, and Woodling played in 125.
Right.
So.
Well, like I say, Stengel told me you're not playing. You know.
Well, why do you think he did that when you were batting 314? I mean, Woodling batted. He had a more power, right? Not much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's on me.
He was more of a line drive hitter. He hit a few home runs, but. He wasn't known as what you'd call a power hitter, you know.
And then Irv Noren.
Irv was
who did he platoon with?
Hank Bauer.
Hank Bauer. So the only full-time outfielder that I was making.
Right. Yeah.
And he only played in 127, so somebody was platooning with him too. Either one of you guys.
Noren would play center field when Mick wouldn't play. I played a couple of games in center field because I played center field with the Kansas City Blues. In 52 all year, yeah.
Now, how did you describe your fielding?
I was a good outfielder. I had a good arm, and I could run even for my size because I played center field in Kansas City in 52. And the reason I played center field, the center fielder got hurt earlier in the season. I was playing right field, and I was the other most experienced outfielder at that time on the ball club. So they put me in.
So you and Woodling were platooning in right.
In left.
In left.
Yeah. Your right field was Bauer.
Yeah.
in Norin.
Would you prefer that? What field was easier to play in that stadium?
Actually, the easiest field to play is center field.
Right, unless you have to go back, way back.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that in right field and in left field, depending upon the hitter, of course, if the balls aren't coming straight at you, they're tailing, slicing, or mm-hmm. whatever, in left field or right field. Whereas in center field, normally the ball comes straight at you, you know.
But also in center field back then, they didn't have a fence separating the monuments from the... The ball could go right between the monuments, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That's right.
You ever see anybody run into those? Or?
No, I never. Because, you know, they were so deep, the ball wouldn't be in the air by the time it got there. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be on the ground, so you would be chasing it.
So what do you remember about the 53 World Series? That must have been quite a thrill.
Yeah, it was. I didn't get to play, but I was on deck a couple of times to pinch hit.
Oh, really?
In fact, I was in Brooklyn, and during batting practice, Irv Norin was in batting practice, and he hit a... In those days, they had smaller batting cages. They didn't have those big ones. And Mickey was standing down on the third base coaching line talking to someone during batting practice. And Irv sliced his ball down the third baseline, and it hit Mickey in the right on his hand, back of his hand. I mean, dead hard, boom, and it just dropped. It didn't just glance. It hit and stopped. So he went in right away and put the ice pack on and all that stuff. And then when infield started, and I think Johnny Padres was pitching for Brooklyn that day. So when infield came up, Stengel told me to go out in center field. So I took infield practice in center field. And in those days, you used to throw your glove down in the outfield grass before you put it. So when I came in, I thought, well, I guess I'm going to play. So
my mitt's out there.
You know, I threw my mitt out there. Yeah. And my mother told me, of course, my mother and father were in the stands, and my dad belted her with his elbow and said, look, he's going to play, you know.
Here's his mitt.
Yeah. So I went into the clubhouse, and I went over to Mick. He was sitting there with his ice on his hand. And I says, how you doing? How's it, Mick? And he says, oh, it's fine. I'll be all right. I said, great. I patted him on the shoulder and walked away. And I thought, damn.
And what game was that?
Well, that was either the first or second game. It was in Brooklyn. And so I told the clubhouse guy, I said, go out and tell the bat boy to go out and pick up my glove. You know, I told him whether. So my dad told me later he was watching that glove, and he saw that guy go out and pick up the glove, and his heart dropped. You know? But that was that one particular time. And then when Erskine struck out 15, set a record at that time in that series.
That was the fifth game, right?
Well, I think, yeah, I think it was the fifth game. And Don Bolwig pinched hit and Johnny Mize pinched hit in the last inning. And
both
Stengel,
struck out.
Yeah. And Stengel called me up, and I was on deck. And I told Bolwig, I says, do whatever, my roommate, he went up to pinch hit. I said, do whatever, get hit by a pitch, you know.
Throw yourself in front of it.
Yeah. But anyhow, he struck out, and then Johnny Mize struck out for the last out. So I was on deck, and I would have gone up to pinch hit had either one of them gone on base one way or the other, you know.
And what was that? Did they score a lot of runs for Brooklyn that day? Or
No, it was a close game. It was a close game. I don't remember that they had. He pitched a great ball game. Yeah.
Do you remember when you won the sixth game? Was that in Ebbets or?
That was in Yankee Stadium.
Was that?
That
fun,
was
fun celebration there.
Oh yeah, that was great. You know, you just can't appreciate the feeling when something like that takes place and you're a part of it. You're sitting on the bench anyhow. You're holding them up, so to speak. You know, but.
So what do you remember? You all ran on and jumped all over each other.
Well, yeah. You know, you did the...
Seemed like the celebrations the Yankees had weren't as wild.
No,
it was like
Yeah.
One year when Kuzawa won it, I don't know what year that was, like 57.
Yeah.
They didn't even celebrate at all. They just walked off the field, because I have it on DVD, all the World Series celebrations.
Yeah, right.
And now they just go crazy.
I know, yeah.
They like a bunch of idiots.
It wasn't that exuberant. There was, you know, a lot of patting and shaking and hugging and stuff like that, but... None of the stuff that you see nowadays, you know.
You must have considered
a big pile of people laying out on the, you know.
You must have considered yourself pretty lucky. first year, World Series ring.
Absolutely. There are people that have played in the major leagues for years and years and years and have never been in a World Series or don't have a World Series ring. And I am very fortunate that that was there. Yeah. Timing is everything, you know.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times guys will get in a World Series like that, like, let's say, Brooklyn in this situation. And they think, oh, there'll be plenty more, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Dan Marino said that. He thought that after he lost to the Niners in the Super Bowl.
Right.
I'm going to be in a lot more.
That's right.
Never came. So you have to get there. You have to get it when you're
there.
That's right. You know?
Well, you know, I think that that would, in those days, there was more chance of having it happen again because the team would be one and you weren't going to lose somebody because of free agency and all that, you know. Once you were there, you were there. Unless they wanted to get rid of you. And now the player has a choice.
Right.
And that's good or bad, I don't know. As far as the team, the continuity is different because you don't have these people there year in, year out.
You know, one player playing with one team his entire career is unheard of now.
Yeah.
You know, very rare.
That's why there's so much fluctuation. You know, you win the pennant this year and you don't see it again for...
Although they didn't really have that many marquee players, except for Yvonne Rodriguez. I mean, they...
Well, I think there's... It's just difficult because money situation is so much different now, you know. The costs of everything. Major League is saturated with so many teams, and so many players. You know, when I was playing, there were 16 teams. Mm-hmm. You know, 8 in each league.
Well, it switched because back then the leagues were bottom-heavy with minor league teams,
mm-hmm.
and now
that's
they're top-heavy with major league teams.
That's,
I mean, that's what Destriando said. He said he felt he never would have even gotten a chance to play professional baseball except for the fact that there was all these minor league teams that needed catchers and personnel.
That's right.
They had to be filled. And,
that's right.
I mean, you know, what is it, a rookie league, and now it moves up. But, I mean, what the Yankees at one time had, like, 2 teams within each tier. Did they ever have 2 AAA teams?
Yes, they had Denver and Richmond.
Yeah.
And they had Kansas City. They only had Kansas City when I was in the minor leagues with the Yankees.
Why do you think the Yankees had the Dodgers number all those years? I mean, they didn't win until 55.
I don't know. Just superior ball club, I guess. You know, the Dodgers had good ball players. There's no doubt about it, but you just can't put your finger on it because they had qualified major league ball players. You know, they had some real stars.
Was
and, of course, the Yankees did too. You know. And it's just a matter of being hot at the particular time, I guess. And for whatever reason, the Yankees were always hot.
What did you remember about those guys and seeing them and being in Ebbets Field during the World Series? That must have been...
Well, it was. It was... Of course, I was elated and enthralled, and I just couldn't believe the situation that I was in, you know. But it's quite a stadium. The only thing is, the stadium itself was awfully small. Yeah. I can see why they moved, because they weren't able to, I think there was only about 30, I think the capacity was 32,000 or 33,000 or something like that. But some of the players with the Dodgers, some of them I had seen before, you know, in the minor leagues. But they had a good ball club. They had a real good ball club.
I mean, it was basically the capital of baseball then, with the Giants, Dodgers, and Yankees.
That's right.
Did you ever associate with any of the other guys, any Giants players? Or
no.
Players?
Never did. When I was in New York, I stayed at the Concourse Plaza. My wife and I stayed at the Concourse Plaza Hotel in the Bronx. And, we didn't go into New York City that much at all. You know, when I was home, we'd stay home, so to speak. You know, we did nightlife and all that because we just weren't able to do that. We didn't know where to go and what to do and didn't have the funds to do it anyhow, you know, because we were only making $5,000, you know, the minimum salary. So,
but that was perfect for you because you didn't have any kids yet.
That's right.
And you could stay in the hotel. Then later when you had kids.
Our son was born in
August 26th.
Yeah, but that was at the latter part of the season, so it wasn't that difficult because he was a baby and, you know, and you don't need an extra bedroom or whatever, you know. But that's true, you know.
So when you went to Kansas City, then you got a house.
Then we got a house, right. And then we had the three kids. And
so trading to Kansas, now that's another question, and I asked everyone this, I asked Charlie Silvera this, and it's kind of a point that people like to talk about with the Yankees. It seemed as though the Athletics would give all their good players to the Yankees. They were like a farm team for the Yankees.
With Kansas City.
Kansas City.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess because the Yankees did own Kansas City, and when Kansas City was the Kansas City Blues or American Association minor league team, Park Carroll, general manager. Park Carroll was a general manager, if I'm not mistaken, when the A's moved over to Kansas City. So there was a relationship there, and that's probably what helped that they were able to do so much trading with personnel and everything. I think it just kind of a fit at that particular
time. Did any
time.
Of the other teams squawk about it at the time?
No, everything was legitimate.
Right.
You know, there wasn't anything. I don't know that the trades that the Yankees made with Kansas City helped Kansas City that much to where it would make them that much stronger. You know what I mean? I mean, not that the guys who were trading, I don't even know who was traded.
Well, I mean, I think of Maris off the top.
Well, yeah, Maris, at that time, Maris was another ball player. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't a slugger that he developed when he went to the Yankees, you know. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he had that nice right field fence to shoot at with the Yankees, which was a reason, one of the reasons why the Yankees got him, I'm sure, you know. And he was a good ball player, but he was just coming along. And by the same token, you don't know these things when you trade for a guy.
Right.
He could go the other way, too, you know. So
exactly.
Everything worked out for both parties in that case. You know?
Right. So you must have been a little disappointed, though, going from a high-quality organization like the Yankees to Kansas City or Philadelphia.
To Philadelphia, yes, I was. I couldn't believe it. I went from a pennant winner, where we won almost 100 games.
Thank you.
To a team that was losing 100 games. You know what I mean?
51 and 103.
Yeah.
Eddie Juice
was our manager. In fact, Eddie was instrumental in, because he told me the story later, that he was in on the negotiations for the trade from the Yankees in 53. And he told me that he wanted me, and that he was at the meetings, and he was the principal of Connie Mack said he would go ahead and make the deal. And the whole thing, evidently, from what Eddie told me, hinged on me, and Eddie wanted me, and the Yankees were trying to keep me out of the trade, but in order to make the trade, and they wanted Bird and Eddie Robinson, so consequently, the trade was made, and I went to the A's, but Eddie told me that he was the one that wanted me.
Wow. So what were the biggest differences between the Yankees and what was Shibe Park like?
Shibe Park was a great, great park for a hitter. You know, the difference in a team, you could tell right away, is that the players weren't that involved in the game. They weren't that enthusiastic. They didn't pay that much attention to what was going on. Guys were trying to sell, who were insurance salesmen, were trying to sell other people insurance sitting on the bench. I mean, it was pathetic. It really was. And my roommate and I, Don Bullwig, were trying to, you know, pick the team up and give it the rah-rah and get the guys off center and everything, but they were just dead ass on the bench. There was no enthusiasm. They just went out and put the uniform on and went through the motions, and it was different than when the Yankees, when you sat on the bench, you had to know what was going on in the field. You had to know how many outs there were, single to walk by, and how many outs, you know. So you had to be aware. So you paid attention to what was going on, which was good for the club. And in the other case, with the A's, nobody really was concerned about the game, actually. You know.
There's been so much written about Connie Mack, but did you have much interaction with him?
I was able to meet Connie at spring training that year, and I think he was kind of phasing out.
How old was he?
I don't know. He was awful. He was had to be in the 90s, I would imagine. I don't know how old he was when he passed away, but I was very happy and pleased that I was able to meet him. In fact, I've got a picture at home with Connie standing in the middle, and I'm standing next to him and whoever, but the guys that were traded from the Yankees to the A's, it was our group picture with Connie Mack standing in the center, and I was fortunate enough to be standing next to him. You know.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I don't have an autograph, but at least I still have the picture. You know. But he was quite a guy, and that's about the only time I was able to talk to him or see him, because other than that, he wasn't around that much. You know. He was.
But you got to start.
Yeah, I started. Right fielder.
That was your biggest power year.
Yeah.
13 home runs.
Yeah. I got started real well, and I got hit on the wrist by Bob Porterfield, and we were playing Washington Senators, and he threw me a fastball, and I tried to get away from it, and it hit me on the wrist, and I was out for 2 or 3 weeks, and then we were playing Willard Nixon. I was playing the Red Sox, and Willard Nixon was pitching. And he threw me one of his fastballs, came inside and hit me on the elbow. That was later on, and I was out for another couple of weeks or so. So that broke up my continuity. There's not as an excuse, but these are things that happen to everybody, you know. But it was just one of those years. I was lucky to hit what I hit, I guess.
Do you think that either of those guys were thrown at you?
No, they were throwing inside. They were throwing inside. I've had people throw at me, and it didn't bother me. One guy in particular, Mike Garcia. When I was playing, then Mike Garcia owned me, right-hander.
Cleveland.
He was from Isalia, and I was from Hanford. And I don't know that he remembered me or not, but we played basketball against each other. And this one day in Cleveland, I got 2 base hits off of him, and I was on first base, and the third out was made, so I was running to the dugout to get my glove, and I ran by him, and I said, "What's the matter, Mike? You getting old?" You know, and that's the first time I ever got 2 base hits. I think the only 2 base hits I ever got off of him. So the next time I come up, he throws one right under my chin, and it knocked me on my backside, and I got up and dusted myself off, and I'm laughing, and I think it was Joe Tipton was the catcher, and I said, "Joe," I says, this is great. I says, "This guy owns me, you know, and he's knocking me down." I says, "That really makes me feel great." Didn't bother me a bit, you know. But, yeah, they threw at you in those days, and there's no big problem.
There's a lot of guys on this team, even someone who knows something about baseball like me, hard-pressed to remember some of these guys.
Yeah.
Jim Finnegan was the best hitter, it looked like. On
That's
team.
Right. Jim was Rookie of the Year that year, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then what do you remember about Vic Power?
Well, Vic was he was a good ball player. He had a tendency to lag off sometimes and not play 100%. I know when we were together at Kansas City Blues, before when he was, we were in the Yankee organization at AAA, and he was playing first base and I was playing the outfield. And in those days, I was a little more mouthy, you know, particularly when a guy was laying down. And he was laying down because he'd hit a ball in the ground and wouldn't run it out to first base. And the guy had a lot of ability. I mean, the guy could hit, he could run, he could throw. But he was a showboat, and he just hit the ball on the ground, and he wouldn't run to first base. So this one day, I forget who we were playing, but it was a close ball game, and he hit a ball on the ground and didn't run to first, and he came in the dugout, and I went up to him, and I says, "Are you tired?" He says, no. I says, "Well, the way you're playing the game, it looks like you're tired. Why don't you go into the clubhouse, take your uniform off, we don't need you playing the way you're playing, you know. So I really got on his case. So for the next 2-3 weeks, he'd play like hell. Run, do everything, and then he'd start tailing off a little bit, and I'd get on his ass again, you know. But that's what he needed.
He just needed a little motivation.
That's right. And this is the kind of a player he was. Well, but he did a good job. He had a good career, you know. And but I'll never forget that because he – and he understood what I was talking about, you know.
Well, you said that you, in your earlier in career, you were a little more talkative on the field.
Yeah.
They say that the art of bench jockeying has really been lost in the game. It used to really be. Did you ever bench jockey? Were you pretty
good? Was no, we'd holler once in a while, you know. Yeah, I think not seeing that many major league ball games now, and you don't hear that much if you're watching it on TV. They don't show the dugout and all that. I know in those days, yes, they would. They'd get on you.
Yeah. What would be the nature of the things they would say? They'd talk about guys' wives? And,
no.
Did it ever get really nasty? Or
no, they just comment about, you know, your abilities or lack of abilities or whatever, you know. Just whatever they felt would get to you, you know. It's just like when I hollered out at Mickey Mantle, you know. Look out for the squeeze. Just something to get them thinking about something else, you know.
Yeah. Do you ever remember anybody else that you got really good? Or that upset?
No.
Got upset?
I don't think so. I don't, I wasn't.
Because I remember old films from back then where you'd see the guy turn and talk right back in the middle of his at bat.
Yeah,
that
right.
Doesn't happen anymore. You know?
Yeah, they'd get on him once in a while, but it was fun. It was all done in fun. Yeah.
Another thing I noticed about the older back then is that photographers were right on the, like, right next to you. Was that ever distracting or?
Not that much, no. As long as they weren't in your line of sight, in your split vision, you know, if you're at the plate or something like that.
Now, you didn't have batting helmets. You wore a liner inside your hat?
I had a liner, yeah. And the liner wouldn't do any good at all.
Did you ever get hit in the head?
Almost. I got hit on the cap, the bill of the cap, but it was a breaking ball. And I pulled away from it, and it just followed me and hit my cap. But I've been hit, you know, in the shoulder and this wrist and the elbow and the ribs and the butt.
So they didn't have helmets at all during your career, not even at the end? 59?
No, there might have been one or two helmets used, but there weren't that many. Not like now, everybody has to wear a helmet, you know. But I had a liner in the liner. Like I say, the liner wouldn't do any good. What you're protecting is your temple in this area, and the liner was up this high, you know. It wouldn't really protect your temple.
Wouldn't have done much good.
No.
Higher or lower.
That's right.
What do you remember about Arnie Porto Carrero?
Arnie Porto Carrero, big, tall right-hander.
Yeah, 9-18.
Yeah, he...
Was he there even the next year?
I don't know that he was.
Yeah, he was. He went 5-9. His career was going down.
Yeah. He had, you know, he had good stuff. Big, tall kid. Big, tall right-hander. And he threw the ball pretty well. He had a pretty good curveball, but it wasn't very effective. You know, it just wasn't very effective. He must have been really good to hit against.
Now, what was it like? Now, they knew that they were moving.
Yeah.
Right, in 54. So what was that like, especially like, do you remember the last game in Philly?
There
were mean fans anyway, right?
There were some good fans. I'll say one thing. They have the Philadelphia Athletics Historical Society, and that's a going organization, and they're doing very well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they honored Gus.
That's right. Yeah. And I've been back to about 3 of their luncheons, breakfasts, and it's great what they're doing.
Yeah, they're
they have a museum, and you know, you think about it, it's been since 1954 that the Athletics have been in town. And they've still got this organization going, and it's doing very, very well. I'm really enthusiastic about that because I get the bulletin every quarter. They send out a bulletin, you know. And like I say, I've been back there about 3 different times. And there used to be a card show that was in conjunction with the breakfast. And the guy that ran the card show, they got rid of him because he was taking more of the money than he should have. So now they're doing it themselves, and they don't. Eddie Juice goes back every year. Eddie's back there every year. Gus has been back a few years, and he honored him 1 year. But they have a great following. They have a great breakfast. In fact, the last one I was, I attended, I think it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. What was the year that Ted Williams passed away?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Dominic DiMaggio and Johnny Pesky drove through, and Dominic was their principal speaker at that lunch or breakfast. And they were driving south. I don't know if you read the book or heard the story and everything. They drove south to see Ted at the last time that they saw him. And they had
That's that book called Friends or whatever.
Yeah, the Red Sox.
Roger, the guy who wrote, was it, yeah. Wrote it, I think.
And
sure.
They've got the picture of
all three of them,
on the front. Yeah. And in that story, it related about this trip. And, of course, I was there at that breakfast. And
plus, you played with these guys, all three of them, right? No.
No, I didn't play with Dominic or Johnny. No. When I was with the Red Sox, I played with Ted. And
that was the end of his career.
Well, he had one. I think he played one more year. Yeah.
He was 40.
That was great. I was very fortunate in my career because I played with some real professionals, real pros, Hall of Famers, you know, Yogi and
Mickey.
Rashi, Mickey,
did
Reynolds.
You ever stop to count how many Hall of Famers you played with?
No, I haven't. Well, with the Yankees, there's almost a handful, I guess. Huh? Yogi, Reynolds, Rashi, Lopat,
right.
Ford.
Correct.
Rizzuto, Johnny Mize.
Right.
I know Gil's not in there. Mickey.
Right.
Sane's
not in there. Okay.
Rizzuto.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But, I mean, you look at that lineup in 53. I mean, you got Johnny Sane.
Right.
You know, this guy that ranged.
So was that the World Series where Kuzawa was the hero? 53? No.
No.
That was later.
I think it was in later years. Yeah, right. But, yeah, and then with the A's, they had Juice and Zernial and, Big Power.
Right.
Pete Suter. I guess those are probably...
Enos Slaughter.
Enos Slaughter with the...
That
was in 55, right.
Right. So what was it like going to Kansas City then from Philly? They were a lot more...
Well, it was, yeah.
Look
it was
at,
more...
at the difference in attendance, my God.
Oh, yeah. Enthusiastic. They were really enthusiastic. You know, they were... Kansas City has some good fans. They really do. And having been there before playing, you know, the Kansas City Blues, I really liked the town. It was a good baseball town. I had a lot of fun there.
Municipal ballpark in here. Manager was Lou Boudreau.
Lou Boudreau, right.
What was he like?
Well, Lou was one of a kind that he was not my favorite manager. He played favorites. I'll never forget Bill Wilson was playing center field. And we were on the first part of the season. And we were on a road. And we were in Detroit. And he sat next to Bill in the dugout. Or in the clubhouse. We were in the clubhouse. And I was sitting right next to him practically in my cubicle. And he's got his arm around Wilson. He says, everything all right? Everything's all right at home and everything, you know, because Bill was kind of having a rough go. And he says, I want you to know you're my center fielder. I want you to relax and enjoy the game. Don't worry about anything. You're my center fielder. And I thought, well, gee, that's great, you know. And we finished that road trip. In the interim, they made a trade for Harry Simpson. And when we got back, when they got back to Kansas City, Simpson played center field, and that was it, you know. And I don't know if Boudreau ever talked to Bill again, or Wilson after that about the change, whatever. But Simpson, wherever he came from, I don't know where it was, he hadn't been playing, and Boudreau had him at Cleveland when Boudreau was managing Cleveland, and I guess it. Simpson had done pretty well for him there. So he puts him in center field batting fourth, and he wasn't hitting his weight, and he wasn't that big of a man for about a month and a half, but he still hit fourth and played every day. And then he started coming out of it a little latter part of the season. I don't know what he ended up.
Ended up batting 301.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess Boudreau knew what he was doing, but
he wasn't a power hitter.
No, he was a slasher and a runner, and that told me about Boudreau. And then, as far as I was concerned, it was Elmer Vallow and I playing right field, and Elmer was hurt for a month, and I played. And I played for the month, and I was hitting about 325. And as soon as Elmer got well, he was playing. And I was put on the bench, and that really upset me because I thought, you know, I was hot, I was doing the job, and this guy comes back and puts me down. So, and then Boudreau wanted me to, he commented just at the end of the season, he wanted to make a catcher out of me. At that point in my career.
At 30 years old?
Yeah. And that's what I felt, you know. And I said, no. I says,
why, because you were big?
I don't know. Why he wanted to make a catcher out of me, I have no idea.
Arm.
Probably. Figured if I could do the catching job, then that would fill that spot and enhance that position or something. I don't know what his reasons were. But I said, no. No, thanks. If I can't, it's a little late in my career to make a change. You know? In fact, I was, well, I don't know how old I was then. I don't know.
30.
30, yeah. And I thought, I'm not going to be able to. No way. But I did not appreciate him that much.
And then, so then 56, you were still with Kansas City, right?
Well, part of 56, and that's when I was traded to the Yankees, and they sent me to Richmond.
And they were just as bad. 52 and 102. Not much changed from 55 to 56.
No. When I left in the middle of the season, I think, or a couple of months in the season of 56, and I went to Richmond. And that's when I, well, with the Yankees. In fact,
traded by the Kansas City Athletics with Mo Bruchki?
Yeah, right.
In cash to the Yankees for Eddie Robinson, then Lou Sixus.
Skeezus. Yeah, right. Lou Skeezus, right. And then that's when I got hot there, and then, like I was telling you, you know what happened. And then I went to San Francisco, the Seals, and I had a good year with the Seals at 57. And Joe Gordon was our manager, and then the Red Sox bought my contract.
Now, was that a letdown, playing for the Seals after playing in the majors?
The money, in fact, I made the same money. Let's see. I think I was making 10 grand, and I was making 10 at Kansas City, and I was traded, of course, in salary still. And I got 10 grand with the Seals. They paid me the same amount. And then when the Red Sox bought my contract, I called Joe Cronin. They sent me a contract for 10. I called Joe Cronin. I said, I want to bring my family out, and the car I've got isn't going to make it. I got to get it, you know. He says, okay, how about $2,500? I says, that's fine. So he sent me a contract for $12,500. And then the next year, I got another increase to 15 grand. That was at 59. So that was the most I made when I was playing. Was 15.
Was that one of the last years at the Seals?
That was the last year.
That was the last year.
58 was the Giants came out.
So you played last year of the Philadelphia A's and
yeah.
last year of
that's
the
right.
Seals.
That's right.
Wow.
I never thought of it, yeah. But yes, that's true. Yeah.
And then 58, you got picked up by the Red Sox.
Right.
And then. That was a pretty good team.
Yes, yeah.
Third in 58.
Had Jackie Jensen.
Fifth in 59.
Ted Williams. Sammy White.
Frank Malzone. A lot of people
Frank Malzone.
He's an unknown name, and he was a good player.
Yeah, he was a good player. Good ball player.
Tell me about Ted. Any interactions with him?
Yeah, Ted was very quiet. People didn't really get to know him that well, or didn't get next to him that much. But we were out in the outfield one day, and during batting practice, you know, shaking flies. And he said, Bill, he says, why don't you stand a little closer to the plate? Because what I did with the bat, I used the bat as a measuring, and the tip of the bat hit the outside part of the plate, and that was my coverage. I could cover my plate that way. Yeah. So that meant I was back, not like Ted, because Ted crowded the plate. You know, he wanted them to throw the ball in, you know, because he could really handle it because he was quick with the bat. And he asked me, he says, why don't you step a little closer to the plate? And I said, Ted, I don't have the bat speed you have. You know, you're very quick with a bat, and I don't have that bat speed. That's why I have to step back a little bit. I've got plate coverage, but I don't crowd the plate. And he said, okay, and that's all he said, you know. But we didn't have too much conversation.
I remember when we were kids, I read his book on hitting.
Yeah.
And his big thing was wait for your pitch.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys swing at a ball that's a strike, but not necessarily a pitch they can do anything.
Yeah.
I remember I batted in Little League. My dad was my coach. And I got up there, and I took 3 called strikes. And I come out of the batter's box, and my dad says, what the hell? And I said, he didn't throw my pitch. I was waiting for my pitch. And he was like, you only get 3.
Well, so, that's it. You got to really... I guess that's the basis of hitting. I sit down and watch a game every once in a while now, and I think about my career, and I thought I should have been a little smarter at the plate than I was. And you know, we didn't have the hitting coaches that they have now, and I thought about
the video and how the visualization.
Yeah, and no one ever talked to me about hitting, and I was one that could use it, you know. Yeah. I really could have used some tutoring.
Did you have individual hitting coaches then, or not really?
I had hitting coaches. Bill Dickey was our hitting coach of the Yankees, and Bill would say hi, and that was about it. You know, I didn't have anybody talk to me about the principles of hitting, you know, or what I should do, what I should adjust to. Nowadays, I've got people that instruct them, coaches.
Year-round,
you know.
Barry Bonds has his own personal.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And the results are there.
Yeah.
You know, that's amazing.
Yeah, in fact, there was a great hitting coach down in where I grew up in L.A. I grew up in La Cañada, and this guy was out of Arcadia, Babe Dahlgren.
Yeah.
And he had his own hitting school.
Yeah.
And he helped a lot of young hitters.
Yeah.
He helped my brothers and everything.
Yeah.
You remember him, right?
Yeah, I remember the name, right.
So, 59, that was your last year.
59, I retired.
Why'd you retire?
Well,